SD Files, the ultimate Chargers podcast with Nate Lundy.
Let's talk Chargers, and to do that, from Bolts from the Blue, also the Mighty 1090 in San Diego, is John Gennaro with us. John, thanks for making some time. Folks, make sure you're following John on Twitter at John M. Gennaro. That is G-E-N-N-A-R-O. John, let's start here. As you saw this Chargers team through training camp and preseason, overall, grade it for me. How would you say that things have been for the last 6 to 8 weeks for the team getting ready for the start of the regular season?
I guess the grade I'd want to give them would be a C. They definitely have good leadership, and they seem to have some talent on the roster. However, it's pretty painfully obvious, and you know, because of training camp and open practices, you get a really good look at the second string guys and the third string guys, and it's just become painfully obvious that this team doesn't have a lot of depth. So they're kind of in a position that, similar to what they were in last season, where if they can manage to stay healthy, they could be a very good team. But last year they finished 4-12 because they weren't able to stay healthy. And so far, they've already seen some injuries in the preseason. They'll be not limping into the Kansas City game in week one, but certainly with some bumps and bruises along the way. So I don't know that they will have a tremendous season unless they get really lucky and some of the young kids end up performing better than they look.
Well, John, we know it starts at the quarterback position like it does for any of the 32 teams in the NFL. Phillip Rivers, at 34 years old, maybe statistically not knocking it out of the park as he did before. How's he look going into this season and expectation-wise, can he bounce back a bit over the course of what we've seen in 2014 and 2015?
Well, look, I think Phillip Rivers is still a top five quarterback in the league. And maybe that's a little bit controversial. Maybe it sounds like I'm biased, but I really don't think that I am. The problem is, and really you can go all the way back to draft day when Eli Manning decided he wanted to go to the Giants instead of the Chargers. The Giants had a better team around him. Ben Roethlisberger went to the Steelers instead of the Chargers, and the Steelers had a better team around him. Really, since about 2007, 2008, the talent around Phillip Rivers just hasn't been there. Last year, actually a couple of the last years, he's had a really bad offensive line in front of him. Last year, he had absolutely no run game to speak of. He's had years where he's essentially gone through four, five, six different starting groups of wide receivers. So when he has a decent offensive line in front of him, a decent running attack, and some good receivers, I still think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And this year, like I said, as long as they're healthy, the offensive line looks a little bit improved from last year. The running attack looks a little bit improved from last year. And the wide receiver group looks much improved from last year. So it could definitely be a bounce-back year statistically for him, as long as he keeps from getting sacked 40 times.
Let's talk about that running attack. Go into the backfield here for me. Melvin Gordon, Danny Woodhead. Is this going to be a true running back by committee? Are they going to try to lean on Gordon? How would you break it down percentage-wise when it comes to the touches out of the backfield?
Well, I am well known in San Diego as one of the biggest detractors of Melvin Gordon, but the team is going to need him this year because Brandon Oliver is already out for the season, and they're not entirely sure who their third running back is going to be. Danny Woodhead is more that third down back, or he's also kind of their 2-minute back, basically a pass receiver out of the backfield that can run a draw play out of the shotgun if you need him to. But it's going to be heavy Melvin Gordon, which it kind of was last year. I thought they should have given Brandon Oliver more touches last year. But the good news is Melvin Gordon looks greatly improved from a rookie campaign, even though he's coming off microfracture surgery on his knee in the preseason and training camp. He looks much more decisive, a much stronger runner, and hasn't come close to fumbling a ball yet, which was a problem with him last year. So if Melvin Gordon can play anywhere near like he played in the preseason, this running game could be strong. But should he get injured, should he face fumbling problems again, or should he just be the same player we saw in his rookie season, it's going to be problems all around the offense.
I know so much of it matters to how that offensive line does in terms of giving Rivers some time, but let's talk about the receiving core, both the receivers and the tight end position. You know, overall, give me your thoughts on where this team stands, John, with their receiving options.
I would give them somewhere around an A. And that's even with Malcolm Floyd retiring in the offseason. He's been their number two receiver for the last 5 or 6 years. They replaced him with Travis Benjamin, the speedster out of Cleveland. The third wide receiver won the job in camp over James Jones, is named Tyrell Williams. Take note of that name because that guy is big. He is fast. He has great hands. He's very strong. They like what they see from him. And Keenan Allen, I mean, to go along with Phillip Rivers, Keenan Allen has had some hard has had a little bit of a hard time staying healthy in his career, college and pro. But when he's healthy, there's really no denying he's one of the top wide receiver talents in the league. He looks fantastic in camp. But really, the way that this offense is going to go, kind of similar to that Patriots attack from a few years ago, is Antonio Gates and Hunter Henry. Hunter Henry is their second-round draft pick, a tight end out of Arkansas, who looks fantastic. Kind of looks like a younger Antonio Gates, honestly. And those two guys paired with, you know, possibly Danny Woodhead on third down, Keenan Allen, and a speedster like Travis Benjamin who can stretch the defense, Phillip Rivers is going to have his pick of the litter as far as who to throw the ball to as long as the offensive line can keep him upright.
When you look at the defense, obviously a lot of attention was paid to Joey Bosa, the contract issue going back and forth with San Diego. But now that he's out on the field, grade out that front seven for me, John.
Well, it's hard to tell because Joey Bosa has practiced with the Chargers at week one. Yesterday was supposed to be his first padded practice, and he missed it with some sort of vague tightness in his leg. So we haven't really seen the front seven that we're expecting to see in the season. It kind of looks like Joey Bosa won't be available for week one against Kansas City, and he's really important. I mean, the two middle linebackers are somewhere around fantastic. Denzel Perriman and Manti Te'o are both very, very good. The outside linebackers, which are Melvin Ingram, Jerry Atauchu, and Kyle Emanuel, are all talented, but they definitely need a strong defensive line in front of them to eat up some blockers. Corey Legit has been a very good defensive end for a while. Brandon Mebane came over from the Seahawks in free agency as the nose tackle. Helps in terms of leadership, certainly looks like he's going to help in terms of pushing the offensive line backwards and stopping the running game. But there is a big gaping hole right where Joey Bosa needs to be. So if Joey Bosa can get on the field and live up to his potential, this front seven could be very dangerous. If he can't, they're kind of going to be spinning in motion and not really going anywhere.
Looking at a four-win team last year, so now let's fast forward here, John. What's going to be considered a success for this team in the win-loss column?
Oh, man. Well, it's a really tough division. You know, the Oakland Raiders are very good. The Broncos are coming off a Super Bowl win. The Chiefs seem to start out every year 8-0, 9-0, somewhere around there. So it's a very, very good division, a very tough division. I'd say it'd be a huge success if they can find a way to get above 500 at the 9-7. 8-8 is kind of what everyone is expecting. And anything below that, you know, you got to ask the question of, is Mike McCoy's job safe?
When you look at the start of the season, you know, obviously taking on Kansas City, from your perspective, would you rather see a non-divisional game to kick off the year, or do you like the fact that they're opening up within the division?
Just because the division is so difficult, I would much rather get that first week game in against a lesser team, you know, say the Cleveland Browns or some other team that had a top five pick last year, just to see if you can sort of figure everything out and right the ship before you got to play some of the best teams in the AFC. But going into Kansas City, playing the Chiefs, it's certainly a hell of an opportunity. It's been a place that the Chargers and most of the NFL have not been successful over the last few decades. If the Chargers can find a way to get a win in Kansas City, that sends a big message throughout the league that they are serious playoff contenders this year. So I guess it's a good opportunity to change your image and your identity overnight.
John Gennaro with us, boltsfromtheblue.com, also part of the Mighty 1090 in San Diego. You find him on Twitter at John M. Gennaro. That's G-E-N-N-A-R-O. Make sure you give John a follow. Keep track of everything going on with the Chargers this season. John, appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy. Anytime.
Looking forward to visiting with John again. Coming up next, though, the coach, Brian Billick. Stick around.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball up to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am an IA, and I'm not, from the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team. And Don McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford, I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than 1-1 touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott could be a huge plus for them, but that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Mike Mularkey. He goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to get. Remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at that Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team that that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? You don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like Mike Blark. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk, okay. But he's not bad. This David Johnson's pretty good. They want to run the ball well, and if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. You're going to play great defense. Typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball then? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bills team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength of the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan, or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do, more so than any team in the league. They morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly, that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you, and we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second win during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere it's, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second win kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've played the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high-level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six-pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience. One team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And then also maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady Eddie, keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there's was a quarterback who's played, you know, in about the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five, Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No, it's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes a national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.